Come on, man. We need to work. Let's go. Let's go.
Down the middle of the field. He's got Cruz. 35, 30.
Rose intercepted.
Touchdown, Zion.
Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live, presented by DraftKings right here on Giants.com. Joined by Lance Meadow, I am John Schmelk. 1 hour of Giants and NFL talk with you at 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. We're going to open up with a potpourri of different NFL stuff, and then we'll let you guys decide kind of where the show goes. But we'll throw a couple things out there to start. And Lance, I think, considering it's the Wednesday before the Super Bowl, we haven't talked much about the game so far this week. I guess that's a good place to start. And I don't want to talk about the game in terms of breaking down who's going to win, but I think it's an interesting thing to break down the trends of what types of teams have gotten to the Super Bowl over the last 10 or so years, because as you know, much like in every sport, sports go through trends. And that's a good way to figure out the type of team you want to build in order to get to the Super Bowl. So, very briefly, let's go through the teams that have been in the Super Bowl over the last 10 years, and we'll kind of break down what they all have in common. You obviously have the Patriots. They've been there a bunch of times. The Seattle Seahawks have been there twice. The San Francisco 49ers, the New York Giants, the Packers, the Steelers, the Saints, the Colts, the Arizona Cardinals, the Chicago Bears. Those are the last 10 Super Bowls, all the teams that have participated. Now, take a look. What do those teams all have in common? First things first, they all have quarterbacks you would consider a top 15 or so quarterback in the National Football League, except for the Bears back in 2007. I wouldn't slide
with Rex Grossman
into that category. But even back in 2007 with the New York Football Giants, you know, Eli was probably right on the cusp of the 15. Give or take, he was still young in his career. Joe Flacco, when he went with the Ravens, was probably in that middle-of-the-league type
still
of range
very
as
young.
Well.
Yeah.
Correct. And they both got better, and now they're both better than that middle-of-the-league type of quarterback. So, first things first, you need a pretty good quarterback. I don't think you need, a top three quarterback necessarily, but you need someone that's good enough to go in there and make a big play when you need him to make a big play. And the good news for the Giants, they have that in place with Eli Manning.
Yeah, well, that has never been a question mark, and that's a great luxury to have considering you could go over half the league, John, right now, and they're still very up and down in terms of where they want to go with the quarterback position. With the Giants, you know, since he arrived in the league in 2004, it's never been an issue. It's never been a question mark. It's just a matter of, you know, everybody around the quarterback and the right mix in terms of the team. I mean, that's what separates the teams that get to the Super Bowl consistently versus the teams that, you know, maybe struggle somewhat to get to that point. And I think that, you know, with the way that the Giants have had their quarterback perform over the last 2 years, specifically under Ben McAdoo, who was the offensive coordinator, I mean, you like what you've seen out of Eli Manning. Now it's just a matter of consistency from the group of players that are around him as well as on defense.
Now that's obviously master of the obvious type of stuff. So now let's dig a little bit deeper. You take a look at some of the teams, including the teams this year. How many really had top defenses? Both teams this year, excellent defenses.
Oh, yeah.
Last year, the Patriots, good defense, not great. The Seahawks, obviously, excellent, excellent defenses. The 49ers in Super Bowl 47 against the Baltimore Ravens, excellent, excellent defense. And the Ravens defense that year, eh.
Well, but they got
down.
Healthy, remember,
correct,
once the postseason started. So I would say progressively they improved. And then also Seattle the previous year before New England. You were mentioning the Patriots Seahawks.
The year
they beat Denver, that was a stellar defense.
Absolutely. Then you go back a little bit deeper, and this is where it gets interesting. In Super Bowl 42, the Giants heading into that Super Bowl had the 27th ranked defense in the regular season. The Patriots defense that year was good, not great. The year before, neither the Packers nor the Steelers, in my opinion, had a top-flight defense. They were good. They were opportunistic. They got some sacks. They got some turnovers. Not fantastic. The Saints and the Colts, the year prior to that, the Saints' defense got a lot of takeaways.
Oh, yeah. Very opportunistic that year.
But they did let teams go up and down the field a little bit. And the Colts obviously never really had a great, great defense. And then Steelers and Cardinals the year before that, their defenses were, I would have to check it out, but I imagine they're probably closer to the top of the league than they are to the bottom. The Giants, and then obviously in the 2007 Super Bowl, had an excellent defense going up against the Patriots, also had a pretty good defense. So, you know, you've seen it up and down where you don't necessarily have to have the best defense in the league like the Broncos have this year, but you better be, even with a quarterback like Eli Manning, we're going to bring this back to the Giants now, you better get your defense into the top, I would say, 12 area.
Well, you want to be in the top half of the league.
If you want to have a real good chance of winning, I think you want to be a little bit better than 15. Maybe be around that top 12, top 10 would be great. Because if you have that great quarterback, you don't need the number one defense.
Well, you can make up for some of your shortcomings and
Correct.
Your issues.
And look, the Giants are able to make up for shortcomings on defense in 2011 in Super Bowl 46. Because they were so good in the fourth quarter, they came back in so many games that year, et cetera, et cetera. But that, to me, right now, and we'll go through a couple other things as well, is the real challenge for the Giants moving forward. Can they get that defense first into the top half of the league, and then hopefully eventually, whether it's this year or the next, the top 10, so you can have a complement to your offense where you can make a real, real run?
Well, what you touched on, John, you know, you mentioned the common theme with a lot of the defenses that got to the Super Bowl over the last 10 years, to me, is opportunistic.
That's true, too.
And what that means is they're getting takeaways, but they're getting takeaways consistently, John, as opposed to it comes in bunches. And if you look at the Giants' defense this season, the takeaways, to me, they came in bunches. They weren't necessarily spread evenly across the board. Let's go back to 2011. You brought up the Giants. I just looked up the numbers to confirm. They finished the regular season as the 27th-ranked defense. Now, that is total yards per game that they gave up.
Correct.
So that's not necessarily the only indicator.
Correct.
But that's where they finished. In 2011, they were the 27th-ranked defense. OC comes back late in the season, let's not forget. That gets the pass rush going again. They win the final two games. You guys and gals know the rest. However, I looked up where they were in terms of turnover differential in the 2011 season. They were +7. And then in terms of takeaways, they finished tied for 6th in the NFL that year. So 31 takeaways in 2011. Hey, that makes up for the fact that you're 27th overall in total defense. But the problem with the Giants this season in comparison, the takeaways were there early. Then we went through this in previous shows. You look at the second half of the season, the takeaways fell off. It's hard to then make up for the 32nd-ranked defense when the takeaways all of a sudden have disappeared.
And obviously this is not a science, and this trend isn't always accurate. But I think generally speaking, it's fair to say the best way to create takeaways if you're a defense is by putting pressure on the quarterback.
Absolutely.
Now, the Giants this year in the first half of the year were a huge exception to that rule because they put very little pressure on the quarterback, but they managed to get those takeaways anyway.
Strips, tip balls, and so forth.
But even if you look at it this year, what are the Panthers at? They have a pretty darn good pass rush. They got some good linebackers that can play the middle of the field and read opposing quarterbacks. You look at the Denver Broncos, you know about their two edge rushers. And, you know, those are two teams that are way up there in terms of turnover differential. The Patriots, they were second in the league in sacks to the Denver Broncos this year. They were up there in takeaways. So takeaways can be tricky because I think when you talk about turnover differential, we've had this conversation this year as well, Lance, I almost think it's a hard thing to predict and it's a hard thing to rely on if you want to win games. Because as we've mentioned, a lot of it's good fortune. Some of it's the way you play and having great players that can, you know, make the type of play you need to get a takeaway. But you still need the opposing team to make a mistake. You can force them into mistakes. That comes back to the pass rush. But it also is relying on them to still do something wrong. I do think offensively, it is more of a learned skill to protect the ball. I do think there are inherent factors with certain teams and how they run their programs where they protect the ball. Tom Brady protects the ball extremely well. If you run the football, like, say, the Cowboys last year, they ran the ball extremely well. Their takeaways were way down because they didn't have to throw it a lot on third and long and plays like that.
Aaron Rodgers is another guy who does a good job protecting the football.
Right, and I think that has a lot to do with his system, a similar system that the Giants are in here with Eli Manning and Ben McAdoo. And quite frankly, Rodgers is such a good arm, he can fit that ball into places that other quarterbacks can't. So you're absolutely right, but is that something that you can count on every year based on the history of the league.
No, it's very risky to count on that. I mean, listen, if you had the choice between being in the bottom of the league in terms of the ranked defense or being the top right half of the league, you'd pick the top half, and then you'd be okay with the takeaways being in the middle of the pack. But you brought up a good question, John, because you mentioned that it's easier to learn on offense to protect the football.
I think so.
I would agree with that, though. To me, there are a few players that just have a knack for taking away the football. For example, related to the Carolina Panthers, he's hurt. He's not going to take part in the Super Bowl. Charles Peanut Tillman, you know, he's known for that strip. Even after you catch the football, he's always, even going back to the days with the Chicago Bears, he has always had a knack, a way to just take away the football. Stevie Brown, the year that he was with the Giants and had, what, 8 interceptions, always in the right place at the right time. So there are guys that get hot on defense. They get in a rhythm where they just have a feel. They have that sixth sense where they know where they need to be to get the football. But it's much more common to list a laundry list of offensive players.
And
I would
frankly,
say.
You have to be able to catch the ball once you have the opportunity. Dominic Rogers-Cromartie put himself into two great positions to get interceptions against the Panthers and the Dolphins late in the year and drop both.
Yeah.
So you have to make the play once you're there. Another player in this Super Bowl that's great at forcing takeaways is Luke Kuechly. He's simply such a smart player, such an instinctual player, and quite frankly, such a freak athlete that he's able to do things at linebacker, read quarterbacks, make plays on the ball over the middle that other linebackers simply really aren't able to do. I mean, there's a reason he's the best linebacker in the NFL that plays in the middle of the field like that. And I think when the Giants now begin searching for players this offseason, whether it's in the draft or in free agency, those are the type of players, Lance, that they have to try and find on defense. Guys that are so gifted physically and mentally, they can create those type of takeaways. Because you're right, it takes a special type of player. Look back at Osi with the strip sack, another guy that created takeaways. Those guys are rare.
Even Justin Tuck, I throw into that category, too. I know you focused on yesterday's show about his retirement. Yeah, he was also known for not just getting to the quarterback, but forcing the quarterback to cough up the football. Versatility. You know, you say it over and over again, it becomes cliche, but, you know, that's what makes a defense so unique in this league. When you have a group of players, the 11 guys on defense, they're versatile. You can move them into coverage, you can bring them back towards the quarterback. After a play is broken down, they still have a way to recover and knock away the football. I look at Carolina, I look at Denver. There's an immense amount of versatility on these two defenses. You threw out Luke Kuechly. You know, we've talked about the secondary in the past. Even a guy like Thomas Davis, who's going to be playing with a broken arm, he's also a very versatile linebacker in terms of stopping the run, stripping the football. They've got also a rotational group of pass rushers. And remember, that's what made the Giants so unique when they won the Super Bowls. It's not just having four options who you just throw out there, first down, second down, and third down. It's also that back-end depth.
It's Kiwi. It's Jay Alfred. Yeah. It's those guys that come off the bench.
Huge. Carolina and Denver, they go 6-7 deep on the defensive line.
Absolutely. And I think another position that you look at when it comes to forcing takeaways is safety. I mean, it's a position that they don't only have to, you know, do things like cover the tight end one-on-one, but they're also playing that center field position, which a big part of playing that spot is reading the quarterback. And knowing where he's going to go with the ball before he goes there, being in the right position, you have to manage your sidelines and you got to manage depth. So that's another position where, you know, it's tough for some young safeties to make those type of plays. That's why it's important to bring some veteran guys in that can make plays on the football. And look at the interception leaders this year. The two of the top three guys are safeties, Kirk Coleman and Reggie Nelson.
That's the guy I was going to bring up, Kirk Coleman, 7 interceptions this season for the Panthers, and he should be a familiar name. He used to play with the Eagles.
Absolutely. So I think those are some important factors when you take a look at these teams. Here's one of the factors that I think is interesting, and I've been in this conversation online with a couple people that we used to go to college with, Evan Cohen, a host over on Sirius NFL Radio, and or rather on Sirius Mad Dog Radio, and I think it's interesting, if you look at the teams over the past few years that have gone to the Super Bowl, now there are exceptions, but for the most part, you will not find teams that have a top 3 or 5 receiver, generally speaking. Now, Demaryius Thomas is a top 10 guy.
That gets to the Super Bowl?
Correct.
It's interesting.
Demaryius Thomas, the top 10 guy, that's fine. Last year, Patriots, Seahawks. You're looking at
Seattle
a bunch of no names.
Gronkowski, one, yeah.
Obviously a tight end, but not a wide receiver. The year before, the Broncos and Seahawks again. You have Demaryius Thomas, but that's pretty much it. The Niners and Ravens, neither one of those teams had a really dynamic receiver. You know, Torrey Smith was a deep threat, but he's not a top 5, top 10 receiver in the league.
And Anquan Boldin saw better days in terms of his receiving threat.
Absolutely. Now, you go back the year before that, the Giants in 2011 are an exception to that rule. They were built around that wide receiver position with Manningham and, more importantly, Victor Cruz.
And Akeem Nicks.
But the Patriots that year, you know.
Wes Welker.
They, you know, he's fine, but yeah. He's not Calvin Johnson. He's not Odell Beckham Jr. You go back, then you have the Steelers. When they faced the Packers in Super Bowl 45, you know, the Steelers didn't have a top receiver. That was before
before the new
Antonio
regime
Brown.
Of guys that they've brought in.
And I think that was actually after Santonio Holmes, if I'm not mistaken. I don't even think he was on the team then. I think he was gone by then.
Yeah, Holmes caught the pass against the Arizona Cardinals.
Correct.
He may have been gone by then.
Correct. That was two Super Bowls prior. And the Packers, obviously, that year had Jordy Nelson. But, again, not a top five receiver in the league. The Saints, when they beat the Colts, didn't have a great, great wide receiver. Marcus Colston was fine, but he's not, again, Calvin Johnson. They faced the Colts. They had Reggie Wayne, obviously a very good wide receiver. So I think it's interesting that you don't see as many top wide receivers on a lot of these teams that got to the Super Bowl. So you wonder how important it is to be great at that position. Now, the Giants are already great at one position in Odell Beckham Jr. So the question then is it worth it to put a huge investment into another wide receiver? I know some Giant fans will talk about Alshon Jeffrey this offseason. You know, is that how you maximize your value on your roster by paying that much money to wide receivers? Considering we've seen past 10 years, the teams that went to the Super Bowl don't necessarily have the best wide receiver duos in the NFL those particular seasons.
Well, you brought up the Detroit Lions, and I think the Lions are a good example or a microcosm of what some teams run into in the National Football League, John, because, I mean, think about all of the cap space that he eats up, Calvin Johnson.
By the way, Golden Tate doesn't have a small contract either.
Correct, and they brought him in via an acquisition in free agency. So what happens is you lock up so much money in Calvin and Golden Tate, and Dominican Sue you can't bring up because you already restructured his contract so much that his cap hit skyrocketed. Nick Fairley you couldn't bring up. So your defense took a hit as a result of all of your offensive investments.
Absolutely.
And then look at what happened to the Lions. They went from having one of the best defenses in the NFL the previous year.
And by the way, almost going to the second round of the playoffs, right, and being the Dallas Cowboys.
Bounce of the ball here or there. Very good season for the Lions, and then look at what happened to Detroit. Slow start. They finished strongly. I'll give them credit for turning things around, but they dug themselves in such an early hole, there was no way they were going to recover and get into the postseason. And why? A lot of it had to do with, as you just pointed out, the investment into the wide receiver position more so than any other position, and you start to weigh, well, the wide receiver position is not necessarily the one position that balances the scales or tips the scales in favor of you.
And much like the New York Giants, the Lions already invested a lot of money in their quarterback position as well. Matthew Stafford had a big contract. Eli Manning obviously makes a lot of money as well, eats up a big part of that salary cap space. You're not paying Beckham a lot of money now.
Yeah.
But you will have to in a few years. Victor Cruz, you know what his contract situation is. So you have to be careful where you keep a balance there in terms of how you balance your books and where you put your money when you're building your roster.
Well, and I think what it also shows in the Giants' case, John, is the importance of finding that next young guy in the receiving corps. Because think about this. If you go back to 2011, you know, Victor Cruz didn't get his contract yet. He was still under
Correct.
A low-level deal. Hakeem Nicks was still on his rookie contract.
Correct.
And then what about Mario Manningham?
You're right. They had wide receivers, but they weren't making any money.
So
it's a great point.
That's
man.
Why you were able to have all three of those guys on the roster at the same time.
Point. It's a great point.
It changes, then you move the calendar 2 or 3 years later. Now,
right,
all of a sudden, you got to work out the economics.
And by the way, one other thing I want to note on these Super Bowl teams, all of them, nearly to a team, had, if not an excellent pass rush overall, an excellent pass rusher. You know about the teams this year. The Seattle Seahawks with Michael Bennett, we know about them. The Broncos, they had lost Von Miller 2 years ago, but he was an excellent pass rusher before he got hurt. The Niners had one of the best defensive lines and pass rushes in the league when they faced the Ravens.
And
the
good linebackers, too.
Had Terrell Suggs, obviously. You go back to the Giants, you know about their pass rushers. The Pittsburgh Steelers with James Harrison, Dick LeBeau, his blitzing defense. Matthews with the Packers that year, they had a pretty good pass rush. They had Colin Jenkins on that roster as well. B.J. Rahi was playing his best football of his career at that point.
And their secondary was good,
so,
too.
Almost all these teams could rush the passer. So if you want to throw another thing that's really important, and to me more important than bolstering, say, your wide receiver position, is getting in players that can consistently get to the quarterback, and that really contributes. We talked about the takeaways and becoming a better defense as well.
Well, and it helps to have that one star, but I think it also goes back to what you and I talked about, John. You need that depth, too.
But having
you
that one that guy does help, though.
Having that one guy helps, but I think surrounding him with four or five options
just
so
as
you
important.
Can sort of just rotate around. Because look at Seattle. I always point out to people who want to have conversations about how you build a team in the NFL. Seattle brought in Michael Bennett and Cliff Averill, if you remember, before they went on these Super Bowl runs. And Michael Bennett and Cliff Averill, who were every down defensive lineman on their previous teams, the Bucks and the Lions, became rotational guys.
They only
on
played
Seattle.
30, 40 yeah. snaps a game. And by the way, they got them at a good discount, too. They only paid, I think, combined around $11 or $12 million.
They weren't breaking open
years.
The piggy bank
Correct.
For the two of them. But the fact that they were able to bring both of them in and then say, hey, we're going to preserve you for the fourth quarter so you can still make those big type of plays.
Fans, don't forget, Big Blue Kickoff Live is brought to you by DraftKings, the daily fantasy sports destination. The DraftKings, you can play as often as you want with no season-long commitment. Go to DraftKings.com, enter promo code CONTACT to play for free today. DraftKings Fantasy Sports, free to play. Here we go, to our phones. Dan in Hawaii. Dan, here's a question. Did you go to the Pro Bowl? Is that like a big thing that people in Hawaii do?
I don't know. I'm on the Long Island.
Oh, okay.
Oh, it's on the Long Island. Okay.
Got it.
Yeah, no, I didn't go, and I didn't watch it. Not much of a game.
No.
I agree with you on that, John. Hey, what I wanted to say, guys, is I think the Giants are a damn good team, and, a few plays here and there, and they beat New England, they beat Tampa Bay, and they're only getting better. Their offensive line has got a year together. They're looking pretty dang good by the end of the year, and it won't take much. Well, they don't need to do much.
Dan, I'll interrupt you for a second. Offensively, I think you're right. When you start talking about the 11 guys walking out on defense, you're looking at finding 7 to 8 starters this offseason based on who comes back in free agency. So there is a lot of work to do on defense simply in terms of filling out the roster.
Well, I agree with that, but I don't think it's as bad a situation as I hear a lot of the guys talk about. I think they got to stay healthy. And that's a little bit of luck. But, let's see what Ogbuzua can do. Let's see if they actually stay healthy, if JPP can actually be on the field. They bring in one or two impact players. The defense this year was not good. But they made enough stops in the game.
There was hesitation there.
And the offense didn't sustain enough drives because I think the offensive line was a little shaky. But I think next year it looks pretty dang good. And with the way free agency is, I think picking up guys for big dollars is the way you ruin your team.
Well, Dan, here's the trick. Thank you, Dan. I appreciate the call, man. Thanks for calling in. Thank you.
Thanks, Dan.
Good to hear from Hawaii. And see, that's what happens when you live in Hawaii. You relax, things
stressed.
Are okay, they'll be fine, they're not that far away, it's so nice and relaxing here in Hawaii. It's a lot different when you're dealing with the snow, you get angry when you're in the tri-state area. But let me just say this in terms of what he talked about real quick. Defensively, okay, returning starters right now, you're looking at Landon Collins at safety, Devon Kennard at linebacker if he can stay healthy, and then Jonathan Hankins on the defensive line. To me, those are the three guys that are on the roster that you know can be starting caliber players for you. If you want to throw in JT Thomas, the linebacker, you can do that too. That's four, okay? So now, three of your best players on defense last year and most talented players on that side of the ball are Jason Pierre-Paul, Robert Ayers, and Prince Amukamara. They all started last year, okay? All three are free agents. So you're going to have to make a decision on those guys. Assuming you bring all three back and you get them at a value that makes sense for you. You still have four guys that you got to figure out who your other starters are going to be. Who's going to be your other starter on the defensive line? Who's going to be your starting safety? And then who's going to be one of your starting linebackers? So that is still a lot of work to do. Because remember, even at the end of the year, the defense was still struggling. It's not like the defense really turned things around much late. Still a lot of work to do on that side of the ball.
Well, and then on top of that, John, I throw into the fact that, your depth chart, too, you need to take into consideration. What the back end of the defense is going to look like. We focus on who the 11 starters are, but in this league, as we were just talking about, with respect to the common trend of what you need to get to the Super Bowl, the depth is just as important. And I'll go back to Dan, who just called in. He said if we stay healthy. If this guy stays healthy, more of a reason why you want to make sure the back end of your defense is in good shape, because you have to assume somebody's bound to get hurt. I mean, nobody ideally every year stays healthy for 16 games. It's the NFL. But when somebody who starts goes down, you have the necessary personnel in place that all of a sudden the level of productivity won't come.
And I think that's especially the case in the secondary, Lance. We talked about this all summer long in 2015, that once you got past Prince Amukamara, once you got past Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie, who was your third corner? Who was your fourth corner? You know, Tremaine McBride stepped in, did a good job. Trevon Wade stepped in, did a good job. But there aren't guys with the history of accomplishments that some other teams might have as your third, fourth, and fifth corner. So, especially in the secondary, where, you know, corners, they tweak muscles, they come in and out of the game, they run around a lot, they can't play every snap. You know, Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie was in and out of games a lot. That's something that you really need to address and figure out. Who your backups, especially if you bring Prince back with his injury history, who's going to be able to be there to step in if those guys can't play?
Well, and I think you also need to take into consideration, this was to me a trend that stood out. I don't really have an answer as to why this always happened, but it's interesting to notice, John, if you go back to a few games, when DRC came out for a play or two, it seemed as if the opposing quarterback looked at the immediate substitution and targeted that substitution. I don't know if it was just miscommunication, the flow of the game, but there are a few instances. I go back to the Redskins game, John.
Well, isn't that smart play by the other
team? Of course it's smart play.
Best corner goes off the field, and you go after who replaces him.
Well, absolutely, but I guess you want to try to avoid those things
moving
forward, and the way you do that is, and I'm not, it's not necessarily a reflection of, you know, not necessarily having the amount of depth in place. Maybe it's a communication thing. I think it's a variety of things that you could go to as to why that became a common trend at one point. But I think the reason I bring that up is depth should never be overlooked. You can't just build a team with 11 on defense and 11 on offense. It's the guys that fill in here or there, play special teams, probably even sometimes more important than necessarily who you're worried about that's going to be on for the first down of the game.
And I think last year we actually saw them add a lot of depth at linebacker. They had a lot of guys that were good on special teams, which helped the team's units, guys like Jasper Brinkley, guys like Jonathan Casillas, guys like JT Thomas. They came in and played, you know, Mark Herzlick's another one. Played linebacker when they had to, but were also good contributors on
especially
special
Brinkley, who you noted. I mean, he really was an opportunistic player when he got in.
201-939-4513. You wonder to see if they're going to bring him back, too. If worst comes to worst, this is a backup, depending on what they do at middle linebacker. But he's certainly good, especially against the run late in the year and had a big part of the Giants' rush defense, which was so good the second half of the year. Andrew, Stanhope, New Jersey, you're up next. Andrew, what's up, pal?
Also, the guy that would do those roundhouse kicks, you had him on the show earlier or last year. He was a defensive end. He would come in, contribute. Remember him?
Who are we talking about? I lost you.
Dave Tollefson?
Yeah, Tollefson. Oh,
okay.
Guys like that, Chase Blackburn, you know, that weren't big-time superstars, but they would contribute.
Yeah.
But I wanted to say the Super Pro Bowl, what about the guy, my wife said the guy from Washington, Kirk Cousins, and Eli had some bad times in the fourth quarter, so she thought Cousins should have got the nod over Eli. Just want to hear your comment before I ask you about the free agents.
I didn't watch a second of the game, so Lance, go ahead.
No, well, I mean, I think, Andrew, your question is more, was Kirk Cousins deserving of getting a Pro Bowl nod? And I would say absolutely. I mean, I would have taken Kirk Cousins over some of the other guys that got invites, like Teddy Bridgewater and Tyrod Taylor.
I don't understand how Teddy Bridgewater got in that game over Kirk Cousins. I agree with that 100%.
Yeah, so, I mean, I don't disagree with your wife's perspective, Andrew. I think Kirk Cousins, the way he played this season, he deserved to get an invite to the Pro Bowl. His numbers were skyrocketing in terms of the touchdown-to-interception ratio. He's a big reason why the Redskins won the division, no doubt about it.
And how many quarterbacks dropped out of the game before it got played? Like eight?
Well, there were 133 players invited, so you do the math. I'm sure a number of them were quarterbacks. I don't know exactly how many, but there were enough guys
that
dropped out.
I want to have some fun with
the original quarterbacks.
The original quarterbacks.
I got to look at don't you want me to look it up?
I
want to make sure you're right,
though. That's fine. Look it up. That's fine.
Let me try to look it up.
All right, I'm going to go through the AFC teams first. Quarterbacks that could have made it but dropped out because of injury or because they didn't want to play. Tom Brady is one. He obviously would have been invited. I think Tom Brady would have been in the Pro Bowl.
I think you're set, yes.
Ben Roethlisberger, another guy, would have went hurt. Now, Joe Flacco wasn't invited because he was earlier in the year, but he could have been an option if he wasn't hurt. But he doesn't count, so that's two. No one else. Andy Dalton would have been a Pro Bowl selection if he didn't get hurt late in the year. But again, didn't get an official invite, so I'm not going to count him.
Okay.
You're still at two. AFC South, I don't know if Andrew Luck was invited. Probably not because he missed so much of the year,
he
right?
wasn't deserving of being a Pro Bowl. Let me look. I mean, this is has it by team. This doesn't necessarily have it by position.
Oh, that's going to make it tough.
So let me just go to the team. That makes it easy. I just got it up. Yeah, no, he was not a Pro Bowl in, original invite. No.
AFC West, Phillip Rivers, did he get an invite this year?
Phillip Rivers, let's see. San Diego.
Did they not have one Pro Bowl player?
Believe it or not, they didn't because I just skipped over the yeah, S's. And they don't even have the Chargers
listed.
They are
listed. Not there. Okay.
So San Diego did not
so
get
no
it.
No Phillip Rivers. Now you go yeah. to the NFC, all right? In the NFC East, Tony Romo out for the year. He did not get an invite, obviously, but he probably would have not for the injury. Aaron Rodgers could have went. He dropped out.
He was an initial invite.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely. Drew Brees, he must have gotten an invite, right? And he couldn't play because of the torn plantar fascia?
Correct. Yes.
Must have been, right? Russell Wilson, he played in the game, correct?
Russell Wilson played.
And then obviously Carson Palmer, he didn't play in the game. He got an invite.
Let's see if Palmer.
Oh, he must
Palmer
have.
Certainly
Palmer
played
had
like
to
one,
have, right? Yeah, he was in there.
Yes.
So that's five.
He was replaced by Bridgewater.
So I guess five, based on my count, five quarterbacks. How about Matt Ryan? Did he get an invite this year?
I don't think Ryan got an invite.
He did not.
Matt Ryan did not get an invite.
Okay, so I guess it's five. Scroll down real quick, see if we can find anybody else. What's your second point there, Andrew?
Chuck, real quick, a tribute.
Okay,
I remember
Newton, six.
When he got released and went to the Raiders, my wife was shook up about that. She said he's the face of the franchise. But it turned out Jerry Reese was right because he wasn't that productive when he went to the Raiders. And what I liked about Chuck, that you could be a fierce competitor, yet you could be mild-mannered. You know, off the field, he was always mild-mannered. And my wife liked, because she's from Thailand, the bow. And the one reporter that worked with you guys, he's Thai Ohm, but he doesn't really know how to do the bow. Like, you're just supposed to kind of roll your shoulders. People do that with their back. But she got a kick out of that. And he was one of the greats, I think, the all-time greats. And I think Tino was wrong when he made fun of me because I said that line was one of the best of all time. Pass rush-wise, it was. And I'll move on to my free agent point. I definitely defense the guy from the Jets, Wilkerson.
Mohamed Wilkerson.
And what about releasing Cruz and signing Calvin Johnson?
No, Andrew, stop. Stop. Okay, thanks for the call. Calvin Johnson's retiring, if he does. I don't think this is some type of long game for him where he's trying to get traded. I honestly think he's tired of taking the pounding. That's what it sounds like to me. You never know. He could be playing games here. You just don't. But to me, Calvin Johnson seems like a guy that's ready to just say, you know what, I'm tired of waking up every day and feeling like, you know what, because I'm getting the you know what beat out of me.
Physically, it does seem that that is the reason. Though it is quite unique that two guys at the age of 30, still very much in their prime, retired
from
with
the
Detroit Lions.
Yeah.
You don't see that happen with one franchise. Now you got two with the same.
There's a reason the Lions are the Lions.
Yeah, apparently.
It stinks for those fans. I honestly feel bad for them.
You get your top leading rusher and now your top leading receiver.
I know usually you aren't one to show sympathy for anybody.
Well,
usually you like to, you know, laugh over the
No, it's just the nature of football sometimes. I mean, Calvin has taken his fair share of pounding on that knee.
Yes.
I mean, I've seen guys, you know,
well,
certainly have to deal with some injuries, but he really, every single year, it's been a knee issue. So you can understand it's going to take a toll on a player. But I would agree with you, John. I don't see this being an angle to get out of Detroit so then he could sign elsewhere, you know, like with New England or somebody else, so he can maybe have an easier path to get to the Super Bowl.
You know, everyone talks about Mohamed Wilkerson. Where does he fit on a 4-3 defensive line? Is he a defensive end? Or is he a 3-technique defensive tackle?
I think he could play defensive end.
He's not your traditional speed rusher, though.
Well, depending on the combinations, you have a defensive tackle.
Because remember, Chris Canty was a 3-4 defensive tackle with Dallas, came here, he played defensive tackle. I mean, he was a 3-4 defensive end in Dallas, came here, was a 4-3 defensive tackle.
Well, but the good thing about the Giants is they like those guys that you can move on the inside and the outside.
That's
so
true.
So can he be that next typical rotational type of guy?
But the question is, are you taking most advantage of his skill set? Are you putting him out of position? If you put him into a 4-3 defense. Because look, Mohamed Wilkerson, first of all, I think the Jets will probably franchise him. I don't think he's going anywhere, for one. Number two, it's always a risk, and you see this with a lot of players. When you take them from one system where they know how to do one thing, and then you put them in a different system, and you ask them to do something else after you pay them a lot of money. Look at Jimmy Graham when he went to the Seahawks. It took him a long time to figure out how to use him. Look at Byron Maxwell, who was a zone corner with the Seahawks, always got a lot of help, as you had Richard Sherman on the other side. Then all of a sudden, the Eagles bring him, want to play man-on-man. Same thing when they signed Nnamdi Asamoah. They tried to turn him into something that he wasn't when he was in Oakland. So whenever you bring somebody in and you ask him to do something different, to me, there's an inherent risk there. Now, I think Wilkerson's good enough he can handle it, but I would almost think more about going out and signing a guy like Snacks Harrison, who's a guy that, as a nose tackle, you know, can play defensive tackle in the 4-3, stop the run. Now, you wonder if that's more of a, you know, copycat role with what you already have Jonathan Hankins here doing. But you put those two guys next to each other, that could be a pretty fearsome run-defense combination, though maybe you wouldn't get the pass rush you would like to get out of those two guys.
Well, and you don't want to sacrifice the pass rush at
this
point. Now, the other thing is, you know, Jonathan Hankins, remember, 2 years ago, came in, he was a tremendous pass rusher. Yeah. That dipped off last season. Can he tap back into that? Can Spags tap back into that to now add that new facet to the defense, or I should say bring back that facet to the defense, because that was so important. You knew inside you were getting a lot more pressure 2 years ago than you were getting this year.
Just in terms of a player on the field, I think going after a guy like Olivier Vernon from the Dolphins,
that makes sense.
Makes a lot more sense, and I think there's less risk. He's more of your traditional
4-3
defensive end.
Another guy, by the way, that I want to throw out, because you were talking about players that adjust to new schemes, it's troubling. Jared Allen was another guy. When he went to Chicago and they changed up the defense, he was lost, because now all of a sudden they have him standing up as a linebacker. Then he got shipped to Carolina. They utilized him back as a normal 4-3 defensive end. So that would be another example. I think that was a good point, that it's attractive to bring him in, but if you're not utilizing them the correct way, sort of counterproductive.
201-939-4513. And again, not to say Muhammad Wilkerson couldn't do it, and I'm sure the football people upstairs would have a much better idea of whether that could happen than me or Lance. But it's something that when you're an NFL team and you're looking at, you know, signing a guy to a big money contract, make sure you're paying for what he's done in the past, and he can repeat that. If you make him change his role, that can sometimes change. Rolando is in Fresh Meadows. Hello, Rolando. You're talking to Lance Meadow.
How you doing, John?
What's up, bud?
How you doing, Lance?
I'm doing well, Rolando. How's everything with you?
Oh, thank God. Good. I can't complain right now.
Or at least you choose not to, but that's okay.
Oh, trust me. I got plenty of reading.
Rolando, trust me. Lance complains enough for all of us when he's here every
day.
So
I make up for the lost time.
Yeah, absolutely.
If Lance knew what I've been through, he'll understand. But anyhow, first and foremost, I like to say we should have a Justin Tuck Day. I think he's deserving of it. He was a true Giant and represented the Giants well. In terms of the free agency, John, I think we should try to address the things we don't have on our defense, which is the free safety and the middle linebacker, which is obvious, you know. And I don't think that yesterday you mentioned Eric Berry.
Yeah.
And I think Eric Berry is going to make that transition, because he's like one of the ones who like kind of was there in Kansas City when things are bad. Now things are becoming, you know, good, and they're going to take that next step, and he probably wants to be part of that progression. So I think he wants to be there, and he's not part of the problem. He's part of the solution.
I agree. I would be very shocked if the Chiefs let him get away, to be quite honest with you, Rolando.
Yeah. Muhammad Wilkerson and Von Miller, those guys are going to be tagged. They're not going to go anywhere. And seeing the way they're signing the Philadelphia, signing the ball players, I don't know what JPP is worth, and I don't know what Prince Mokomor is worth. So in terms of the money that we have, it makes me kind of weary in terms of how far can we go with our budget. Can we get a Gibson? Can we get either one of the linebackers from Denver? Or can we get a guy like Davis, the inside linebacker with the Jets? We need a wide receiver based on what we don't have and what we need to kind of balance the line with Beckham, where we maybe might get a Marvin Jones from Cincinnati if we could afford it, or get the wide receiver from Seattle, Kelsey. I think
Curse,
yes. You know I'm going to mess up on the names. Okay.
That's all right, Rolando. It's all good, brother.
Yeah.
And one of the things that we've been talking about in terms of injury that kind of, you know, makes me wonder is, are we signing the free agents more toward the end of their career? And even though they're young in terms of age, but in terms of football years, maybe they're getting to the point where it's going to be a consistent year in, year out injury. You know, based on what they've been through during their career, that maybe we should start leaning towards the 25 years old and give them a long-term contract where when they do reach 27, 28, that we had already invested 3 years, and we can build on that instead of trying to get the guy. I know you mentioned the guy from San Diego yesterday, but he's 30-plus. The same thing with Victor Cruz. Victor Cruz is going to be more injury-prone. The same thing with Beatty. Yesterday was a nice, interesting conversation between Paul Patino and Chucky from Maine. And you know,
interesting. And Chuck, wow, that's not something I've heard very often. But anyway, continue.
Bro, no, Lance, really.
Yeah.
Based on what we have on our, based on what we have on our roster, and you're saying what we have on our roster, if these guys are not, you know, injury free, let's give him a shot. Let's see what Beatty can do if he can compete back to the left. What is it that he can't go back to the right? Oh, you know what? Maybe he can go to the right and solidify the right with Schwartz and give Hart another year of building, or take Schwartz out and put Hart in, building towards the future, and where, you know, your fifth or sixth guy, you know, based on his salary, Schwartz, you have someone who can be able to, you could swing with, in my opinion, John Jerry and Reynolds as your reserve. The only thing that I'm looking at a little bit that's concerning to me is the running back. We could say Jennings had a real good ending to the season, and then you kind of heard Tom Coughlin before he left in one of his last conferences, saying how he kind of picked it up. Pick what up? I mean, you've been here the whole time, and all of a sudden you turned it on? What is it that you did different? Did you hear the media say that you may be towards the end of your career and you're going to be ousted? Were you also on the 30-year-old, you know, range, and you want to keep your salary? That's what I'm curious from. Oh, one more thing.
Yeah, finish up, bro.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you see the Senior Bowl?
I watched the first quarter. I have not watched the rest of the game yet because, quite frankly, that's when most of the really excellent players were in. You know, you had Carson Wentz, you had the running back from Alabama in there. You had guys like that. So I did not watch past the first quarter. It's still on my DVR. I will watch it hopefully at some point.
Okay, when you do, check out Vernon Butler.
Oh, yeah, I like him.
Oh, bro. He took the offensive lineman. He didn't hit him in the shoulder. He lifted him up from his chest and threw him into the backfield. You see the space between both his feet off the ground, and went after the quarterback and got him. His comparison is to Muhammad Wilkerson and Hankins, Jonathan Hankins. There's a linebacker. I'll make this. I'm gonna get off at a linebacker from Temple, Tyler Mackovich, from Temple. Real good inside linebacker. Reminds me of shorter Gary Reasons. Thank you for taking my call.
All right, thank you. You touched on a million things there.
Yeah.
And we'll try to get to as many as possible. First, Vernon Butler, 4-3 defensive tackle. He plays in the middle of the line. So he's a guy that, you know, the Giants already have a guy like Hankins at that spot, but obviously he's a guy that did show up at Senior Bowl and showed he was very active at Louisiana Tech. Number two, the comment I wanted to make, and I'm trying to go back to all his points, in terms of the free agency, I think, you know, you hit on the head there, Rolando, why it's difficult and dangerous sometimes to try to build your team on free agency, because you're getting guys sometimes in the latter part of their career. You know, you have a great 24, 25-year-old player. There's a reason that the NFL has a franchise tag. They don't want those players to get away from the team that drafted them. So they're given that tool to keep them on the roster. And I think that's why you don't see many of those guys like Muhammad Wilkerson, like Eric Berry, like with JPP and the Giants last year. The Giants didn't want to lose Jason Pierre-Paul, so you slapped the franchise tag on them. Those guys don't come around very often because teams don't want them to leave.
Yeah, ideally you want to be able to get the free agents that are coming off their rookie contracts.
Right.
That's the class that you want to. Now, if you look at last year's group, you know, Shane Vereen had only one deal in the NFL.
Yep.
Dwayne Harris had only one deal in the NFL.
Yep.
JT Thomas, I believe, only had one deal in the NFL, too. So they were targeting those players. I mean, Rolando brought up the fact, yes, you don't want to keep bringing in 31-year-olds, 32-year-olds. So if you look at the free agent class, I think it met what Rolando was bringing up, where, yes, you want these guys coming off of rookie contracts. Sometimes, though, you could bring in a player who has been perfectly healthy during his rookie contract, and all of a sudden he suffers an injury for the first time. Those are things that it's impossible to predict. You know, that's football at times. But I would agree, when you look at free agents, you want to look at the mid to late 20s as the age barometer, and then you want to look at the players coming off of their rookie contracts. But, you know, as you mentioned, if you have a valuable player coming off his rookie contract, 99% of the time, the team that he's coming from is going to do everything they can to retain that player, whether it be through the franchise tag or working on an extension even before they hit the market.
Fans, don't forget, Big Blue Kickoff Live is brought to you by DraftKings. Now, if you've never played on DraftKings, it's changing the way we play fantasy football. Just pick your contest, pick your players, and if you win, pick up your cash. Simple as that. Go to DraftKings.com, enter promo code CONTACT to claim your free entry today. DraftKings, fantasy sports, free to play. Let's go back to the phones. Greg is down in Virginia. He's been holding the longest. Greg, what's going on?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Hey, Greg.
Doing well, Greg. How's everything with you?
I'm well. Hey, I was just wanted to talk about the offseason, and I was curious in y'all's opinion, you know, we have a little window, right? We're at the end of Eli's career, so we sort of need to win in the next couple of years. Would you agree?
I think you got a 3 to 4 year window.
3 to 4 years?
And okay. That's being maybe generous on the back end.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think it's more like 2 to 3, but, you know, I'd hope for 4. Now, that being said, I have another question. It's, tell me the last defensive lineman who's had 10 sacks or more.
For the Giants?
In the past 20 years, as a rookie.
Oh, as a rookie?
No, almost nobody. You aren't going to get a guy that's going to get
Devon Kurse and Dominican Sue.
Yeah, that's exactly. It. Yeah, you aren't really going to. Yeah, and you know what? That's a good point, Greg.
So
you aren't going to draft a guy that's going to make an immediate impact with the D-line.
The Giants need a pass rush, and that we also need help in safety. I think those are the two off-season keys.
I don't think anyone would disagree with that.
And you know, you can throw in securing that second cornerback and shoring up your linebacker core into that mix, too. But you're right, I agree. Pass rush and safety are probably 1 and 2.
I think those are the biggest needs.
Yeah,
and
I buy that.
I hear a lot of people when they're, you know, we're talking about a pass rush, they're talking, well, we have the 10th pick, we could just get a defensive lineman. And, yeah, maybe in 3 years that will work out and he'll be a great pass rusher. But we need one now. And more than likely, just from sheer numbers, he's not going to be a premier pass rusher.
Not in year one, probably not. In year two, though, maybe.
Agency.
But in year two, maybe. Have you seen guys in year two, whether you're talking about J.J. Watt, whether you're talking about Aaron Donald.
Yeah, JPP even on his second year came out like that.
Absolutely.
But it's rare, but I guess what I'm saying is it wouldn't be wise for us to think we're going to solve our pass rush issues this year with our number 10 pick.
No, I agree
even
with that.
Even if he turns out to be a good player.
Well, Greg, that's a fair statement, but again, you know, as I've been pointing out earlier in the program, depth is also important on the defensive line. You can't just say we're going to go out in free agency, get a guy who can get us 10 sacks, and everything is also going to be solved like that. You need options. So if you do take somebody with the 10th overall pick, it's another option. It's another guy that you could bring into the rotation. Plus, remember, it's not just about the sacks. It's about what that rookie can do to create opportunities for the guys that are next to him and playing on the opposite end. So maybe he's not going to get the 10
Smith
sacks in his rookie year.
This year did well as a rookie. He had, you know, he was a solid pass rusher. He had like 8 sacks, and he was a great rotational player for them. So I know I'm not saying you can't get a good player. My main point is we can't rely solely on that pick to try to fix our defensive line. It can help, but if I'm the, you know, obviously not, but if I'm the Giants, you have to get a safety in free agency. You have to get a legitimate pass rusher. I can get a receiver. I mean, look at all the receivers across the league. You know, you can get receivers at pretty much any round, and they'll produce. I mean, got Allen Robinson and Allen Hurns in Jacksonville, and they were picked at, like, what round? And they're all over 1,000 yards. Like, you can get receivers to produce. So I don't think using money on a receiver and overpaying for one is wise, because, I mean, if you start looking at the rosters, wide receiver is probably the deepest position in the league as far as legitimate stars. And so it's not wise to spend on that when you have as many holes as we do. So I think focus on free safety and defensive end and free agency, and then, like you guys were saying, get your depth through the draft based off of that. Maybe re-sign Prince, even though I don't like him because he gets burned by legitimate number ones and can't stay healthy. But, you know, I think those are the two biggest. You can't come away with just Jason Pierre-Paul coming back on the defensive line because we know, I mean, he had one sack in 8 games.
Fair enough, Greg. I think you make a good point. We appreciate the call, bud.
I think he made a good point about the wide receiver position. I mean, you see all of these young wide receivers coming in, John, in their rookie year and their sophomore years, and they're lighting up the scoreboard.
Right, and quite frankly, I mean, much like he said, you can't count, and again, Eric Flowers came in and Landon Collins both came in. And one started 15 games, the other started 16 games. Flowers missed one game, right, because injury?
Flowers missed one game.
Correct.
Yeah.
So one played 15, one played 16. They started, but obviously, while both guys showed a lot of promise, they both had bumps in the road as well, and you expect rookies to have that. So he's right. I don't think you can expect whomever you draft, even at number 10, to come in and, you know, be 2011 Jason Pierre-Paul and, you know, get 17, 15, 12, even 10 sacks in their rookie year. It just doesn't happen all that often.
I agree with you in terms of the defensive line. I think that you need to think about a combination between free agency and the draft. I think that's the right way to go to help out the pass rush. You can't expect one player in particular, whether it be a rookie or a free agent, to come in and all of a sudden problem solved. I'm going back to also the point about wide receiver. I agree with the last caller, as Greg emphasized. I think the draft you can find in the later rounds, good wide receivers that come in, make an impact year one. I was trying to think back in last year's free agent market, the wisest signing in terms of free agency. And one guy that came to my mind, I think Michael Crabtree was probably one of the best signings, no?
Yeah, and he had a much better year than people think this year, simply because he's on Oakland and nobody really paid attention to his numbers.
And they didn't have to all of a sudden give him a boatload of money,
right?
The Raiders, and they brought him over from San Francisco. I mean, you could go out, you get a quality type of receiver who, you know, may have had a down year, has something to prove, gets into a new system, it's refreshing, and all of a sudden, voila, you know, things start to turn the corner. Crabtree, as I mentioned, he had a great year with Oakland. He actually turned that into an extension. They recently just gave him a longer deal. Those are the types of receivers I think he could bring in as complementary pieces in free agency and maybe do most of the heavy lifting in the draft. Alshon Jeffrey's attractive, and he's by far the biggest difference maker that's going to be out there on the free agent market. But, you know, as we pointed out, John, earlier in the program, the Calvin Johnsons of the world and some of these other prominent wide receivers, the Dez Bryants, the Demaryius Thomases, you're going to have to spend a lot of your salary cap to just bring in one guy, whereas if you have other needs, I'd rather use the money that way.
Best free agents that changed teams. It's an interesting question. I think Revis, I know they paid him a lot, but he had a big impact.
Oh,
on
now
defense.
You're looking big picture at all free agents. Okay,
sure,
I thought you were focusing on it.
I can look at wide receivers too. Jeremy Maclin.
Maclin's fair, but Maclin was much more costly than,
he got paid,
than Michael Crabtree.
I think he gave the Chiefs what
they were
looking
for, though.
I would agree
with that.
He did very,
give them
very
that number
year.
One option, which they had not had.
Torrey Smith.
I don't see that type of
San
impact,
Francisco.
No. I would not put him in that category.
Yeah, you know what? It's funny. Most of the best free agent signings were by teams that kept their own players. Iapati, he certainly helped the Cardinals on the offensive line, though I think, didn't he get hurt?
He was hurt initially. Yeah. He wasn't ready to start the season.
Most other really – Charles Clay, good signing by the Bills. He had a good year for them.
Yeah, he had a good year, but once again, you know, did that really put them over the top?
No, it didn't. Yeah, you know, you make a good point, Lance. I don't know what type of year Arakpo had for the Titans. I have to look at his numbers. Shocking, I did not watch a lot of Titan football this
year.
Yes.
It's bad oversight by you.
Yes, I know.
By the way.
Julius Thomas, the Jaguars, he was hurt all year, at least most of it. Frank Gore was a bust going to the Colts.
Tell
Andre Johnson, bust
that.
Going to the Colts. Yeah, you know what? I like your Michael Crabtree
selection.
Sometimes
it's those, and I don't put him as a low-tier guy, but maybe a middle-of-the-pack type of free
agent.
Coming
off an injury, though, he was,
question
you know,
marks.
Considered a big risk.
Yeah, did not have a great season with San Francisco the previous year.
I'll go with you on that. All right, here we go. Two more calls before we say goodbye. Carlos in Pennsylvania. What's going on, Los?
How you doing, guys?
Doing well, Los. How are you?
Doing well, Carlos. What you got?
I'm good. I just want to say, like, compared to, like, other callers, that I think we should really focus on some older vets, like free agent signing.
Such
that,
as?
You know, I really don't have a problem with that. If you know, guys like Eric Weddle. Like, he's, you know, 31 years old. I would be very happy if we sign him. You know, as I go back to, like, the years that we won the Super Bowl in 2007, we had R.W. McCorders, Sam Madison, older, you know, older Vest, and Amani Toomer was 33, Barris was 31, but they were already on the team. And in 2010, we had Deion Grant, Chris Canty, and Rocky Bernard. They contribute a lot. And I don't think that, you know, I don't see a problem with the Giants signing, you know, older vets. I think that they, you know, the experience, and I do not have a problem with that at all.
Yeah, Carlos, remember, though, those guys weren't signed when they were over 30. They were signed in their late 20s, and they happened to be 30 when they happened to get into those games. You know what I'm saying?
Right, right. But, I mean, wasn't R.W. McCordis and Sam Madison signed that year, though?
Yes, yes. Those two guys were signed as veterans, but a guy like Canty was signed in his upper 20s. A guy like Boliwa, I think, was signed in his upper 20s. Roll, if you go back, Burris was signed when he was in his upper 20s. He wasn't 30 yet when they signed him, and obviously Toomer was a draft pick. But, look, you're right. I don't think there's a rule that says you can't sign a veteran free agent. You just got to make sure that you don't run into a situation where you give them – you know, X dollars guaranteed, and then all of a sudden he gets to the third year of a, let's say, a five-year contract. He's hurt. He's half the player he used to be, and you got all this dead money on your cap. So you just got to make sure you don't run into that sort of scenario with some of these older free agents.
I totally agree with that. I totally agree with that. Can I just tell you, you know, just free agents that I would love the Giants to pick up?
Sure, right on them off. What do you got?
All right. Well, first of all, Eric Weddle, I definitely want him. I want to like to see if we can sign Danny Trevathan from the Denver.
Trevathan.
I like Tremaine Johnson from the Rams. I think he could be like a, you know, I think he would be an upgrade compared to Amu Kamara. And the last one, and he's an older age, Terrence Knight. Knighton from the Washington Redskins. I wouldn't mind. You know, I know he's 30 years old, but I really would love that signing too as well. And thank you for taking my call, guys.
Thanks, bud.
Thanks for the phone call. Yeah, Terrence Knighton signed a one-year deal with the Redskins, and people were surprised. He sort of like banked on himself, had a very good year, and I'm sure he's going to get some interest there. He's 29 years old. He's right at that borderline.
The old Kevin Millwood method. If you remember, go back to when he was with Scott Boras, he signed that one-year deal, and then he cashed in the following
season. Bank on yourself, and then all of a sudden it could turn out well, and then it could also backfire on you.
That's absolutely true.
It's a big risk that you take.
It's the same risk you take when you sign the franchise tag, and you don't want to negotiate a long-term deal.
Yeah.
You run the risk of getting hurt, and then all of a sudden everything changes. All right, final call of the show. Raphael is in Pennsylvania. What's going on, Raffy?
How you doing? I was wondering if you guys think, like, out of linebacker and defensive end or just defensive line is more important to you on defense for the Giants currently.
The position that is most important, you're saying, out of linebacker and defensive line, which I would rank higher out of those two?
Yes, like currently. Yeah, just out of those two personally.
I think the defensive line. I would put that as priority number one.
So if you were in the first round, you'd go for a defensive lineman instead of a linebacker? Or
not necessarily.
I mean, those are two different questions. I mean, if I have a linebacker who I have highly ranked on my board and he's sitting there at number 10, that's going to change all of a sudden my perspective, especially if we're down to my third or fourth ranked defensive lineman. But I think as a group, I think the defensive line as a whole unit, I would rank from a position standpoint. In terms of who I'm targeting at number 10, that all depends on what my board looks like. If I've got my top linebacker there at 10, I could have a very good reason to go after the linebacker position at number 10.
But in general, like Lance said, you talk about pass rush. That's why the defensive line, in general, might be a higher priority. But when you get to the draft, Raphael, it's about the player. It's not about the position that he plays.
And what about free agency? Do you think there's any linebackers? I like Mark Barron maybe as a weak side linebacker, but is there anybody who interests you in free agency on the defensive line part or a linebacker part or even a cornerback part that you think might be worth going after?
Well, the caller before mentioned Danny Trevathan. Brandon Marshall, his teammates, another free agent, two guys that are pretty good in coverage. Those are two linebackers that jump out to me talking about it. On the defensive line, you know, we've had the calls about Olivier Vernon. He's going to be one of the top defensive ends. Then you worry about your own guys, too. Robert Ayers and Jason Pierre-Paul. Those are two of the top defensive ends that are going to be available, too. So I think those are some of the names you talk about. The other Dolphin defensive lineman, Shelby, another guy that's a free agent this year that is being highly rated by a lot of folks. So there are guys out there, Raphael. But the thing, and again, this is why we probably, and why Lance, I think, said defensive line is more of a priority. You just look at the dollars that get given out to linebackers as opposed to defensive ends, say, in free agency. It's night and day. Defensive ends generally are on a much higher pay scale than linebackers are.
Hey, what do you think about Mark Barron?
Converted safety. I know they moved him to linebacker because he couldn't cover. I'm not sure. A similar player in, you know, to Landon Collins. You hope he obviously can figure out his coverage stuff. I don't know about that one.
Yeah, I know. He moved around, you know, as John noted, because obviously part of it was also performance and play.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
First you know,
he could have covered anybody. Yeah, that was the problem.
It wasn't as if he was moved because he just woke up out of bed one day and said, you know what, I just feel like playing linebacker today. So whenever you see that, I think you at least need to take that into consideration. It would depend on, you know, how the Giants would envision a player like that, how they would want to utilize that. But you know, I think there's some more attractive options that are going to be out on the free agent market before I would get to a player like Mark Barron.
Appreciate the call. Thanks, Raph.
All right, Raphael. Thanks so much for the phone call.
What do you think about Derek Johnson?
Dad, I was going to get to that. You took the name right out of my I was going to bring up Derek Johnson and Tom Bali.
I'm asking you about him.
Those are the two. I like both of them.
Well, Tom Bali is more of a 3-4 outside linebacking pass rusher.
Well, but remember, sometimes in order to help out the defensive line, doesn't kill you if you get a little pass rush out of the linebacking core, too.
That's true. But
you know, that's a way to supplement it.
In the 4-3, you need your linebackers to cover, though. I'm not
you
sure
do.
You do.
I agree with you there.
Especially a 32. That's a 32-year-old.
Absolutely.
Right there,
no, so. And the age is something you have to weigh with both of them. Derek
Correct.
Johnson's 33. Ali
yep.
is 32. I think, though, their statistics haven't dropped off. So
no.
It's not as if they're red flags from that perspective. They're probably going to be the most costly linebackers up there.
See, I don't know. How much is Derek Johnson going to get at 33 years old? How many 33-year-old linebackers are out there that are starting? I mean, how much can you bank on him for being good for that much longer?
But you know what? He may be one of those type of guys. He'll take maybe a 2-3 year deal. Who knows?
You would
Who
think
knows?
He would take the hometown discount.
He would, but
Kansas
for
City.
Example, Kansas City then is ultimately going to have to
decide which
get some bucks want. Out to retain him because they got a few guys, you know, that have provided strength on that front seven. Kansas City is a group that we've talked about also the last few seasons. A lot of depth, and Ali and Johnson, a big part of that.
And they paid Justin Houston last
Correct,
year.
Because of the whole franchise tag situation.
Correct. They signed him to a long-term deal, right?
They did sign him, too, but he was one of the guys Correct. In that franchise tag
and
conversation.
And they have Berry as a free agent, too, on the defense, too.
They have a lot of question marks.
Sean Smith,
their cornerback who came up from Miami. The Chiefs and the Broncos, two teams in the same division who are built similarly, they both have a lot of free agents in that front seven.
See, the thing that makes it a little bit easier for the Chiefs is that they're not paying Alex Smith a ton of money. He has a decent contract now, but he's not making, you know, $20 million a year, which allows them to take some of that money and spread
that's
it around
point.
To some other
Well,
position.
And then based on Manning's future, who knows what that's going to do for Denver. But that here's the thing. Osweiler's a free agent. So
right.
you have to determine what you want to do with Brock Osweiler.
Jamal Charles is making a hefty price, I would imagine.
Charles
right?
is making some decent money.
Yeah.
Correct. That obviously impacts the salary
Correct.
Cap, too.
All right. Yeah. Our time
and
is up.
They just
Mr.
paid
Meadow.
Jeremy Maclin, too, is another guy who we just talked
That's
about.
A great point.
It's another one.
Appreciate
yeah.
the time, my friend.
Sounds good.
Tomorrow
will
be Meadow and Dottino on Big Blue Kickoff Live. There's our boss, Don Spell.
Yes.
For Lance Meadow, I'm
With
Josh Spell. We'll see you next time on Giants.com. Have a good one, everybody.
Have a good one.
He's got through! 35, 30!